Welcome to Add This to Your List. This is episode 78, and I'm one of your co-hosts, Fumi Shimano, and I'm joined by two lovely, lovely gentlemen, Mark J. Parker and Tom Chuba.
Hey, y'all.
Yes, you are.
How are you guys doing this lovely, lovely daylight savings time now? Pitch black at 4 p.m. type of life.
Yeah, like, for real. I went to the movies at 3:20 and I came out at 5:20 and it was dark. I was like, damn, Parasite. Like, damn.
Is that what you went to go see, Parasite?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I love
it. You both have seen it, right?
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Oh my gosh, we have to talk about it at some point on the show, hopefully, because I hear nothing but the best things about it. So I'm jelly, I'm behind.
It is so crazy. I never thought it would be that cool.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, the daylight the whole time change has got me a little warped, y'all. I'm a little tired. I mean, I was thankful for that extra hour of sleep. But yeah,
totally.
At 5 o'clock, it felt like 9 o'clock. I'm like, ooh, it's nighttime. I need to go to bed. Oh, wait, let's have dinner first. You know?
It's so funny because for some reason, every time we get to gain an hour, I get up exceptionally early. Yeah. So I was up everybody. At like 4 o'clock this morning and I couldn't go back to sleep. I like took a shower. I like got up, walked around. Then I fell asleep again around like 6:37. But
some girl on Facebook was like, let's be real and let's stop pretending that anybody really gains an hour with daylight savings time. And she had like 150 likes because people were probably just like,
Although it is still better than when we spring forward because that really sucks when you lose an hour.
Yes.
Ugh. Yeah, but at least you get more daylight.
Yeah, I know. Ugh, true, now we all have to hibernate.
Anyway, we've got a fun show today. We're going to break down some housekeeping and headlines, and then we're going to do an abbreviated list because we are going to get into the launch of the long-anticipated, long-awaited Apple TV.
Mm-hmm. The shows are here.
Plus. Don't forget the plus, girl.
Apple TV Plus.
Don't forget that plus.
Right? The shows are here. We all picked a show we're going to talk about, and then we're going to talk about like what we think about the interfacing and, you know, getting it in the app and all that stuff too. So we're going to break it down for y'all. Mm-hmm. But first, let's get into some housekeeping. Thomas, you brought it up, so take it away.
Yep, sure. Just really quickly, I wanted to give our listeners an update because just last week on our last episode, we were talking about how a lot of people are clamoring for a Hocus Pocus sequel, and we said, you know, I really don't think the women would want to come back and do that, at least not to the full extent that everybody wants them to. And just this past weekend, Bette Midler and Kathy Najimy were together, and they basically said, we're here for it. Bette was, like, begging to be in it and, like star in it. And Kathy, again, it's funny because Kathy Najimy said, you know, we're all so busy and if nothing else works out, at least a cameo. And that's the same messaging she was pushing at the Q&A that I saw at the previous week. But then Sarah Jessica Parker, who was not with the two women, put an Instagram post and said, we have all said yes, and we are ready to star in it. So it's interesting because two of them are like, I want to do this full force, 100% full-fledged. And then Kathy and Jimmy, who you would think out of the three women needs the work the most, she's kind of like, you know, I'll do a cameo, but it doesn't sound like she's committing to much else right now. So it's interesting.
Yeah. That's all that's needed, just a cameo.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, you never know. I mean, the other two, like, probably live a little bit more of lavish lifestyles, I would assume, than Kathy. So maybe Kathy's like, oh, I'm good. True. I got lots of money. And the other two are like, oh, my God, I have bills. I have kids. I have shoes to buy. Give me the role, you know? I don't know. But that's exciting. Yeah. I'm glad they're not shutting it down. That's always a, you know, nice sign for fans.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Tom, you've also got some news regarding Miss Gaga.
Ooh.
Yeah, so my news this week. So it seems Lady Gaga has finally picked her first role, her first major motion picture role post A Star Is Born. As Fumi said, you know, she got sick of her in the awards circuit last year, and she said, I hope that Gaga just takes a minute to take a breath. Seems mm-hmm. like Gaga did that. And now she has selected her next project. It is going to be, she's going to be playing Patrizia Reggiani, who essentially is accused of having murdered Gucci, the designer's grandson. Mm. It's going to be directed by Ridley Scott. But guys, I got to tell you, this sounds an awful lot like American Crime Story Versace to me.
Mm.
And I don't know. It sounds like Penelope playing Donatella Versace, and it's just interesting. I don't know. We'll see. But, I mean, Ridley Scott, he's an acclaimed director, he's so fantastic. There might be something there.
I'm actually not mad at this. I think that Ridley Scott does a really good job mm-hmm. at giving, like, thriller-type, suspenseful-type show, mm-hmm. or, like, movies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see. And, listen, Gaga's a good actress. Like, she definitely gives it
definitely.
Her all. You know, I guess this was kind of like her first love. Like, she wanted to do mm-hmm. acting before singing and music.
Oh, wow.
So
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
She said it during her award circuit. She was very...
Oh, yeah. Tom.
I guess I wasn't reading
that
interview.
She's very vocal about it.
She said that on multiple interviews that, yeah, she wanted to, like... Like, she started out as an actress, but because she wasn't as confident, then she at least just... And she was weird and all those
things. Oh, right. Yeah. This is all ringing a bell mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm actually excited for this. But I do agree with both of you. This does sound like American Crime Story Versace.
When I saw the headline, I was like, oh, are they remaking that already?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Totally.
Okay, but that's cool.
Yeah. And Mark, what do you have?
So, y'all, we have some interesting news, not only personally for me, but really interesting, I think, for the whole live streaming TV situation. PlayStation View, which is owned by Sony, which was one of the very first live streaming TV cable, whatever you want to call it, bundles, right?
Yeah,
it's been around for a few years. I've had it for a couple years. We actually quite like it, but they just, you know, a couple days ago announced that Sony is shutting it down. And this is not a super surprise because there's a great site out there if you're ever, if any listeners out there are ever curious about all the options with cord cutting and, you know, which streamer to go with for your kind of live TV stuff. It's called cordcuttingnews.com, I'm pretty sure. But they've been hit. Oh, yeah. I read it a lot. It's great. They're great. But they have been hinting that for the last month that it's like Sony is sort of like really quiet about PlayStation View, and like they're slowly like getting rid of some channels and prices are slowly going up. Like, what's going on? And they noticed, I forget exactly what happened, but they had noticed that they like started removing stuff on their main site about PlayStation View.
Look at them doing their job.
I know. True investigative reporting, and now it's official.
Yes.
Sony is closing it down. Apparently, even though, like I said, Sony's View, it really, all this time, I gotta be honest, guys, all this time, PlayStation View should have just been called View, because a lot mm-hmm. of people to this day, even though it's been around, let's say, 4 years or so, maybe more, I forget, but everyone still thinks you need a PlayStation to view it. And although it works great on PlayStation, I watch it on Apple TV. You can watch it on Fire Stick. You can watch it on Roku, I think. All sorts of things. But so, yeah, I guess a lot of people still never caught on. And so they haven't been making money. And
do we know how many people are subscribed to PlayStation View or have it?
Yes. Let me confirm, but I'm pretty sure I heard it was only like 100,000 or something.
Oh.
Or like,
I thought it was more.
Or maybe half.
What?
I honestly, guys, I didn't even know it was a thing.
Why do you like it, Mark? What is it about it that you found interesting?
Oh, I like it. Just the interface, I think, is great. I think it looks really nice. I don't know. I just thought it was the DVR is great because it's totally basically unlimited. And I don't know. I just think I just really love the way it looked. I loved the guide, and like they show you what's all the shows currently airing at the moment, like in according to most popular, which I always thought was interesting. But I think that's sort of catching on with other streaming TV as well.
Yeah.
I think also the lineup was great because, you know, not every streaming TV cable thing has all the same channels.
Totally.
But yeah, so this is a bummer for me because now we got to choose something else. Although I think we're going to end up going with Hulu TV. What do you use, Foom? I forget. Do you use any of this?
Well, I actually, I don't use anything. I just I'm able to use my mother's cable.
Okay.
And I can get all the channels that way.
Okay.
But I've been thinking about this because she's going to get rid of it soon because she'll end up moving back to her house and going back to what she has at her house. I'm thinking about doing YouTube TV.
Okay, yeah. I was looking...
A friend of mine does it. And
we
really
were looking
likes
into
it.
YouTube TV. There's just a ton of ads. Like, there's an ad every few minutes. So, I don't know.
Oh, really?
Maybe that was just the lower tier of what we were willing to pay. I'm not sure.
That'll annoy me.
Yeah, but so that just kind of got a little annoying. But I just looked it up, and I totally gave everyone wrong information. It was not 100,000 subscribers. It was looks like it was roughly. It did actually have almost 1 million subscribers. So. I don't know. As of September 2018, so this is quite a while ago, it had 745,000 subscribers. So it was doing well, but apparently it was always in one of the last places when you have Sling, DirecTV, which now is AT&T now, I believe, Hulu TV, YouTube TV. So it was always falling on the lower side. So, but, you know, that's not a number to, you know, make fun of. So they were doing well, but I guess... I think, honestly, Sony, from the get-go, maybe was just sort of not sure how to really do it well. And so they're just like, yeah. You know what? We can't beat them, so, you know, we're closing. So they are shutting it down January 30th, 2020. So at least they gave everyone a heads up. So, yeah. Bye. So as of this year, I guess it did reach 800,000 subscribers. So now, everyone, we got to find another TV to, you know... watch. So maybe Hulu, yeah. Maybe YouTube. We'll see. Actually, listeners, if you have any recommendations, let me know. Let me know what I should be going with.
Let us know. All right. Well, that's it for housekeeping and headlines. So let's get into our list. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thomas, go first. What you got?
All right. So my list item is the movie Harriet.
Mm.
Of course, we were bound to cover Harriet because we interviewed Wyatt Smith.
Yeah, of course.
Just last episode, the editor of the film. Okay, so I'm going to start off, guys, and tell you right away what I think of it. It is an add this to your list.
Great.
It is a good movie. Mm-hmm. It is not a great movie. Mm. Okay, and that's kind of a lot of the buzz that's surrounding the film right now. I mean, it sits at 74 on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. which is fine. Interestingly, it has an A+ cinema score. I think that is not deserved.
Ooh.
But you know, that's neither here nor there. It's a good movie. Cynthia Erivo plays Harriet Tubman. And if you didn't learn about her in history, shame on your school, because she was one of the most famous, what they called, quote-unquote, conductors of the Underground Railroad, mm-hmm. which was the secret society that kind of shuttled slaves from below the Mason-Dixon line up to the north and into freedom.
Mm-hmm.
She started out as a slave herself and made the very tough decision to leave her family behind on the plantation that they were all working on to try and make a run for it herself. She makes it through 100 miles on her own through the wilderness with wolves and rivers and what have you, storms and all the things that were plaguing the woods back in the 1800s that we don't have today because of overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
So she makes it to Philadelphia and she gets in touch with somebody who's running the Underground Railroad. Side note, I have to ask you guys, because Jeff and I, we were laughing about this after the film. Do you guys remember learning in history that she founded the Underground Railroad? Because both of us were like, no, we can specifically see our textbook saying that she was the founder of the Underground Railroad. Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I feel like,
okay,
I feel
she
like
wasn't.
That we might have heard that, but I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, that wasn't true.
Okay, interesting. So, okay,
She rescued the most slaves as a conductor of the Underground Railroad, but she did not found it. It was well in existence before her.
Oh.
Okay, so you know, the movie goes through all the trials and tribulations of her leaving her family, making it to freedom, and then wanting to go back and rescue people and all that good stuff, right? All that stuff works. Cynthia Erivo is phenomenal in the role. I mean, she basically based it off of just historical documentation because we don't have any video footage or video interviews of Harriet Tubman. So she had to do a lot of reading about what this woman was like and kind of channel that based on what she thought she was as a character and as a human being. What doesn't work? And the reason why I say it's a good movie, not a great movie. The script very, very, very much reminded me of the very big hit in the mid-90s that you guys will probably remember, The Patriot,
starring Mel Gibson. I like The Patriot.
Okay, I do too. I love The Patriot, right? But this movie feels like it's stuck in time. I feel like this script has been around for a very, very long time,
probably.
And they finally just got around to making it into a film because of the timeliness, right? Feels a little bit sanitized, and I know that's a problem that a lot of people are having with it. Also, you know, I think a lot of people are having a problem with the fact that Omar J. Dorsey from Queen Sugar and Halloween 2018, if you guys don't know him, he plays a villain.
Yes,
and,
Tom.
I mean,
let
I'm
him
sure...
know, Tom. Let him know, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were black people who were free, who were kind of helping the slave masters track down the runaways. I mean, maybe there is some historical accuracy to that. But to put that on screen felt a little bit insensitive, and he just seemed a little too harsh of a character for my liking. So, Fumi, that's all the beef you had heard about the film
that
was around Omar J. Dorsey's character?
Because that character is completely made up. There's no such person
in history
involving Harriet Tubman in any way, shape, or form. Oh. So people had a problem with that. And they also had a problem with this white savior complex that the film has, where the slave owner comes to, like, her rescue at a certain point in the film. Which, keep in mind, this is the very first film we have about Harriet Tubman.
Yes.
So, it maybe if this was, like, film 5 or 6, people could have been like, all right, been there, done that, like, whatever, this Hollywood obsession with, like, the white savior. But I think for the first film, people have, you know, especially black people have a problem with that. As I mean, duh.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
duh.
I will say, Foom, when you had told me that you heard people were kind of like lamenting about the film, I did try and keep an eye out for the white savior complex because I figured that would be a big part of what people were complaining about.
Uh-huh. Did you feel that?
I didn't
feel
see
that?
It. No, my issues of the film were more in that they vilified certain black people. I mean, and they even, and again, I'm sure this happened, but a couple people go back to get their families after making the choice to quote unquote abandon them. That is a huge thing in the film too. They go back to get more members of their family, and their family members have moved on, remarried, right? Had children with other slaves. And I'm sure that happened. But the fact that they were making it seem like a lot of the slaves essentially chose freedom over their families was a little bit hard to swallow. Again, probably did happen. Mm-hmm. It's just the way they portrayed it. But yeah, it's a good movie, and I think you should go see it. Do you need to see it right away in theaters? No, probably not.
Interesting. How do you think this is going to affect the Oscar discussion?
Well, I know that it made a lot more at the box office this weekend
did.
Than they were anticipating it would. So a lot of people think that that's going to propel Cynthia Erivo back into the conversation again. Because when I was in Toronto, she was definitely in the mix, right? People were so sure that she'd be one of the five who ended up in the Best Actress category for a nomination. And then as the award season has shaped up a little bit since TIFF, she's kind of fallen out of that top five. But a lot of people think it'll propel her. I'd be definitely okay if she got a nomination, but I do not think the film should get any other nominations aside from that.
Interesting, Tom.
Wow.
Okay. Well, it's on my list to see as well.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be checking it out.
Cool.
Mark, what's on your list?
So, ladies and gents, it's funny. I seem to be on a music kick lately. I don't know what's going on.
Are you our music correspondent?
I guess so. At least right now. I mean, it's a busy time for movies, TV, and music. So, this week I have another great album that I would love everyone to add to their list. I think it's great. It was sort of a surprise album or mixtape, if you will. Some articles are calling it a mixtape, and this singer has, released mixtapes before, but I would say this is a full-on album with the amount of songs. But I gotta say, guys, add Mike Posner's latest album, Keep Going, to your list.
Okay.
He's got a sexy voice.
I've always loved him. I totally agree, Tim. I've always loved him.
I forget what he looks like.
Oh, look him up, because he looks a little different. He's got long hair. He's a little hairier, because he just did a cross-country trek for like 6 months. He did like the full, he had an,
oh, he looks good.
Yeah,
like
it works
that.
For him. It totally works for him. But I don't know when he found the time to record this, or maybe he must have recorded these songs before his trek, which I believe started in April. And as you may have heard, in like August, maybe he was bitten by a rattlesnake as he was like mid journey across from New Jersey to California. That kind of disrupted his trip a little bit. But a lot of these songs are about the preparation for this trip. And there are some real voicemails in it from Diddy, from Steven Tyler, from his mom, which got me very emotional. And I found the album really emotional. It's very much one article called it like an auditory diary, and it really is. It's interesting because it is a little self-congratulatory in that Mike Posner now is very proud of himself, as he should be, that he now makes music that he wants to make, and he's not really like doing the whole pop dance thing, which I thought was great back in the day, but I also love this version as well. So he is sort of, throughout this album, constantly reminding you what he was and what he is now and how this is really him. So I like that. I could see if that sort of is kind of like, all right, I got it. Like, I'm 10 songs in, I understand. But literally there's a song with Wiz Khalifa that's very good called Look What I've Become. And he even says, like, I'm no longer a pop singer, I'm me. He talks about how...
So what genre would you say this is?
Oh, gosh. Mark? It's Tom, that's a great question, because it almost feels... Some of the songs feel kind of theatrical to me because they're so meditative, and there's like a trumpet, and then there's like a piano, and then there's just him. The first song is not a song. It's really just a recording. It's called Introduction, and then parentheses Keep Going, which is the name of the album. And it's just him like kind of whispering to you, and it's very meditative, and he's just like, he basically says, I encourage you to listen to this album in one full sitting. Don't stop. If you have to stop, then this is not the right time to listen to this.
It's a big ask of people.
I know. But it's...
Right? Like, who do you think
it's a really cool kind of... I don't know. I like what he's doing here. It's not your typical album. He made this as... Yeah, it might be like 16 songs, but it's one full story. And... I really like it, and there is definitely some upbeat stuff, but a lot of it is slower. It's, like I was saying, emotional. It's reflective. I gotta say, my favorite song that made me cry is Amen, or Amen, but he pronounces it Amen in the song. Guys, it's a beautiful, beautiful song. He talks about, I like him, and I have liked him, but I don't really know a whole lot about him personally. But he talks about when his sister came out to him, and it gets emotional. And again, it's kind of like where he's been, where he wants to go, what he is. It's really a cool album. I really recommend it. I think it's, I don't know. I think it's a reminder that we all kind of should take a look around and, you know, look at our past, look at our future. I don't know. I think it's pretty beautiful. So Keep Going by Mike Posner. Go for it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. So I will go next. On my list this week is Mrs. Fletcher. It's a new comedy.
Katherine Hahn.
Yes.
Yep, with Katherine Hahn on HBO.
Tom's random pick for the Monster Universe.
Right?
I love you, Katherine. I'm sorry if they don't.
Well, no, we like her. Oh,
I know. I'm teasing.
On casting.
I'm teasing.
But with this, it's good casting. So I'm going to say that this is an ad.
Nice.
I enjoyed the first episode that I watched. So I guess this season is 7 episodes, all directed by women. So
cool.
7. How interesting.
Hats off to HBO for that, because
cool.
We like that. So Mrs. Fletcher is about a single mom, Eve Fletcher, i.e. Mrs. Fletcher, who is sending her son, her only child, off to school, off to college. And so she's going to be an empty nester. And so this is kind of like a coming of age story about her being on her own and like really tapping into what she loves and desires and wants for the first time, and watching her son flourish in college in this new environment. We get a little bit of a glimpse of who he is as a high school student.
Oh, okay.
spoiler alert, a bit of an asshole.
Ah.
It's interesting to, it's going to be an interesting journey to see how he adapts to college.
His transformation,
yeah,
right.
Because in, like, what you see of him so far in the first episode, you're like, you're kind of a dick. Like, I'm not really interested in watching where your character goes. But you see a little bit of some stuff in the, towards the end of the episode where you're like, okay, well, this could be interesting. This could be something where I'm interested to see her kind of coming of age versus his coming of age. Her in, like, the middle of her life kind of starting over and him at the beginning of his life starting his.
Interesting.
So.
Do we know why she's single? Why she's a single mom? Divorced?
Yeah, you do get a glimpse of her ex.
Okay.
In the episode. I think it's a typical situation. I mean, I'm sure we'll find out more, but it appeared that it was a typical... You know, they just got a divorce. He got remarried, has started a new family, and she just,
got it.
You know, raised her son on her own.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, there's definitely some elements and some things where you kind of got yourself thinking, you know, who's going to be the people she sleeps with and what are going to be her love interests. And I think it'll take some people by surprise where it appears the show might be setting up for that.
So
it's definitely an ad. I enjoyed the first episode for sure.
It looks fun.
It does look fun. It has great music. There's this one scene where she's having the birds and the bees talk with her son, and it's really funny awkward, but it's done really well. You can both tell at the end of the conversation, they both were like, what the F just happened? like they're both not into it. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Nice.
And one of my favorites is also in the show, Carrie Wilson. She plays Eve's next door neighbor and friend. And I just adore her. What did I say? Carrie Wilson? Casey Wilson.
Oh, that's right. Casey
Every
Wilson.
Time,
oh, Casey Wilson.
Yeah.
Yes, got it.
Every time Casey Wilson is in something, I just happen to just enjoy
oh,
the show.
Oh, my God.
Because I just feel like she's so
I
great,
forgot she's so. In this. Okay, so she yeah. will probably be like sort of a little supporting regular, you think?
Yeah. I think she's not like a main cast member. She's definitely recurring.
Oh,
but
love her. Okay.
She was a joy to see when she ended up popping
oh,
up.
Oh, good.
On the episode, so.
Love that. Yeah, this is a good cast. And now, do we think this is like a series or is it a limited series? Like, is it like a short thing?
That is a good question. I am going to assume
my guess is a
it's
series,
a series.
Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
I think that it'll probably have some legs on it.
Okay.
I know it was based off of
it's based on
a novel.
Yeah, a book, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, written by Tom Perrotta. Mm-hmm.
Oh, he did The Leftovers.
Yes. Oh, did
HBO
he?
HBO loves him, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, so same. He wrote it. He wrote the show, and he also wrote the novel.
Hmm.
So
okay. Interesting.
It'll be good, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list to check out. I'm glad you liked it.
And it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival this past one, the one that Tom attended.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Cool.
Came out of Toronto as well. So yeah.
Nice. Okay.
So that was our list. We have all ads this week. We have Harriet. We have got Mike Posner's album Keep Going. Mm-hmm. And we've got Mrs. Fletcher on HBO.
Mm-hmm. And cool. It's funny, those all sort of have, I just realized they all kind of have a theme of like a new journey, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Harriet, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Posner, mm-hmm. Mrs. Fletcher figuring mm-hmm. out her life. Journeys.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, coming into a new year, new journeys for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And now we talk about Apple's journey.
And now we're talking about Apple's journey. There you go, Tom. I like that. Yes. Well, let's get into it. Okay, so Apple TV launched on November 1st. And we've all been very open and kind of excited, kind of curious to see what it was going to be, what their programming is going to be like, what their interface is going to be like. Is it going to be user-friendly? Are we going to be able to watch it on things that were like non-Apple products? And I feel like Apple TV, well, actually, I want to hear from you guys first. What did you think about the launch? Like, do you think it was successful? Do you like the interface? Or what are you thinking? Mark, what do you think?
I am using my Apple TV to watch it, which obviously is probably the preferred method. So at least the way it looks, the whole interface looks beautiful, of course. I mean, Apple's stuff always looks stunning. It's kind of funny that they're so the first thing you see for me is like Morning Show and like the Jason Momoa one C, but then like they try to sprinkle other shows that aren't Apple in there to kind of be like, oh, we're not only pushing our stuff.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was really perplexed by that.
Yeah, I was kind of like, now's the time to just push your stuff. It's fine. Totally, like, you know, right. So I thought that was kind of funny, but no, I think it's pretty easy to navigate, at least on Apple TV. I'm sure it looks a little different elsewhere. We're going to get into it with the shows we picked. I just am sort of surprised that they've already renewed a lot of the shows for season two. It's like, don't you want to just hold off a second? Because it's not like these shows are cheap.
I know.
You know? What do you guys think?
Well, Tom, what do you think, Bart? Go ahead.
Interface-wise, same thoughts as Mark. It doesn't feel as much of an experience as Netflix does, though. Mm. Like, I don't know. When you're in Netflix, whether you're in the app or on your tablet or wherever you are watching Netflix, it feels so isolated. It truly feels like a world of its own, and they do a great job making you feel like you're in a world of Netflix things. I just don't get that same experience through Apple TV.
I wonder if we'll get more of that once they beef up more of their content or something.
Yeah, that could be it.
See, I think they're trying to create that experience, hence the mixture of like shows you can watch, different shows, and then different movies you can buy through Apple TV in addition to like Apple TV's original programming. But I agree, there's something about it doesn't quite work for me. I agree, it's beautiful. Apple really does have really crisp, stunning interface and on their product.
But
I don't know. Like, I'm a stickler for kind of like some sort of organization. I feel like Netflix did a really good job of doing that. I think they heard user complaints about how you log in and you just feel overwhelmed by content, and it's just kind of like thrown at you, and there's no organization to it. It's not divided by like action and suspense or horror. Because, you know, if you kind of have a theme, you're kind of like, I feel like having a horror night, so you just know where to go, and it helps you at least streamline through all of the movies and shows that are available. I would appreciate Apple, one, like you said, start with the original shows. We all know what you guys are doing. We all know why you're launching this. And we're all curious to know what your original shows are.
Yeah, that should be like first thing. And it is, but it's still like, you know, you scan through and it's like, oh, I see John Krasinski on an Amazon show.
It's like, why is that there? And then why is that at the top? Because isn't Amazon like one of your direct competitors? It's just a little confusing the way that they have it set up. So I'd appreciate that to be smoothed out, and hopefully it's smoothed out as they start to roll out more programming, because we do know that Apple has other programming that they didn't start the launch with, which also a little weird. Like, why start out your launch with only like 4 or 5 shows if you have like,
I think they should have launched a movie too.
So just a couple things there, it's a little strange.
And as of this recording, I think just today they did release their trailer for their original movie with Samuel L. Jackson, the banker.
Oh, so they did. Yes. Yeah.
That's super interesting. I must have missed that. I didn't even know they were doing movies yet, like theatrical movies. So, okay, cool. Yeah. It's weird that like M. Night Shyamalan, Octavia Spencer, those shows are coming. And that's the thing. Not like in the new year, like just a few weeks from now. So it's like, okay. But how did you guys watch it? Did you, I forget. Do you have an Apple TV?
No, I don't. So that was my other issue. I have Rokus, which I love. I would never want to get rid of them. I have Apple products. I have like an Apple laptop, phone, iPad. But it took me so long to watch the show that I picked, which was The Morning Show, because I wanted to be able to watch it on a large screen, i.e. my TV at home. Yeah. But I couldn't because it wasn't available on the Roku that I have to my living room television.
Interesting.
And so that was annoying to me. So I was like, I don't want to watch it on my small little phone. I don't want to watch it on my iPad. I don't want to watch it on my laptop. Like, I wanted to watch it on my couch on a big screen. So I realized that I could get it through my Roku in my bedroom because it's a newer version. Oh. So I added it to that one, and then I watched The Morning Show. But I don't know if it's a reason why there's only a certain, like, level to the Rokus you can get, or if you have, like, a Fire Stick. I don't know if it's available even there, but I would think that, and I would hope that Apple knew that they were going to launch this long enough that they would have had a more seamless, like, availability.
Yeah. Right. And how did you watch it, Tom? Did you watch it on your phone?
On my phone, yeah. But through Comcast, we actually, because I was able to see the interface through the app on TV, on our smart TV.
Cool.
But I actually watched Dickinson during lunch at work on my phone. So.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
So let's get into it. We all picked shows that we wanted to check out. Mm-hmm. I already said I was going to watch. I picked The Morning Show, but I'll go last. Mark, what was the show you picked?
Totally. So, as we know, there were a handful of new shows that just came out. So Fumi went with The Morning Show. Tom went with Dickinson. And I was like, damn, y'all picked the good ones. But so I ended up watching.
You
I
sure about that?
oh, shit. I actually watched all four first episodes of their new shows. So, but I will talk to you guys very quickly about two of those shows, C and For All Mankind. Long story short, ain't gonna keep watching either of them.
Oh, so they're okay to miss?
Yeah. I don't want to say either is skip that shit because, you know, obviously there is quite a lot of work involved in these shows. You know, you can see the high budget on the screen, especially in C. But guys, these shows are not for me. Neither one of them. I was so, after about 20 minutes in both, I started like doing stuff on my computer and I honestly forgot the show was still on. I was like, oh wow, I'm missing everything. Oh well. So basically I'll run you through the story real quick. The benefits of C, that's the Jason Momoa action sci-fi one. The benefits, it's beautiful to look at. Like Fumi was saying, if you can watch these shows on a big screen, that's really, I would say, how they're meant to be seen. Even just the opening graphics are really cool. Great stunts, great set. I think they shot in the woods of Canada. You know, Jason Momoa looks awesome in, you know, all the Apple HD and everything. It's just kind of corny. Oh, it's corny. I was laughing. I don't think I should have been laughing. So it's set in the future, like hundreds of years in the future, where because of some big thing that wipes out most of the world, most humans, the remaining humans, only a few thousand that are left, they are blind. They no one can see for years. Babies are born and everyone's blind. So, you know, everyone's hearing has gotten better. Many characters in the show say, I can, don't lie to me, I can hear it in your voice. Like, they're very sensitive to that, but no one can see. This woman gives birth to twins. Guess what, y'all? They can see. And so that's like, you know, super, everything's like,
okay.
You know, so it's interesting. I mean, it's definitely not a bad premise. It's just, it kind of makes me think of like Walking Dead. Like, it's kind of like
Meets a Quiet Place, maybe, or
yeah,
Bird Box.
Even those movies, there were just the dynamics between the characters were so interesting. I mean, Bird Box, you had all different kind of people. A Quiet Place, you had a great family that you immediately cared for. I don't really care about these people. I mean, Jason Momoa is great, but like, and then it's weird because it's so far in the future, the creators are kind of making it feel like it's old, back in the day, like Native Americans and like,
yeah, that's the way
America.
It looked in the promos, yeah,
right, yeah, like they're wearing like
caveman,
you know,
times,
absolutely, it's kind, yeah, of a little caveman, little native, you know, they're singing and like banging on their chests, like that actually made me think of like Planet of the Apes. It's weird. I'm like, what, you know, and it's kind of funny, like hearing Jason Momoa going like, oh, I'm like, oh, this is so weird. Alfre Woodard's in it. Ooh. You know, I don't know.
I love Tom and I were both like, so Tom and, yeah, I are both like, oh no.
Yeah, it's just sort of, literally, I'm not lying when they go like, ooh, I am happy that they hired at least some blind actors, really blind actors, because most of these leads can see. One actress I actually met a few years ago when I was auditioning blind people at What Would You Do? So that was nice to see her. There's a great actress from Blade Runner 2049, Sylvia something, who plays the bad guy, but like, I mean, spoilers, I guess, sorry, but like, we meet her and she's masturbating and it just feels very like, what, huh, the hell? And like, it's just odd. And then she does weird things and it's like, this is strange. So, you know, I'm sure C is going to be for some people. Again, great action, great stunts, but like, I need more than that to stick with the show. Sorry. So,
all right. Tell me about the other one, because I was really curious about it.
Yeah, so the other one also has a great premise, I think maybe even more interesting. So For All Mankind, the biggest star on that show is really just Joel Kinnaman. I didn't really recognize anyone else, which I like. I'm okay with. So that one is sort of set in an all. It kind of creates an alternate history, kind of almost like Quentin Tarantino does in his movies. You know, he kind of like edits history a little bit. So it is the year of the, you know, big famous moon landing. Although in For All Mankind, it is not Neil Armstrong. It is not the U.S. that gets to the moon first. It's Russia.
Ah.
It's the Soviets. And so everyone's freaking out.
I find
out.
That to be
now
such
they're...
a boring, like, you know. Yeah.
You know, at first I thought it was kind of interesting. Like, ooh, you know, I still have never seen The Man in the High Castle on Prime.
Yeah,
but I know
that's
that
what
kind
it sounded
of,
like.
Yeah, that kind of manipulates history or something. And it seemed interesting. I never caught
don't
it.
Need
probably won't. Okay, there you go. Well, no surprise from Fumi saying that about Amazon. But it's no Modern Love, apparently, everyone. But, yeah, guys, it is, it's more sleepy, in my opinion, than C. It is like...
Oh, wow.
It's so boring, guys.
Is it a period piece?
Oh, it's period. Yep. It's set like in, you know, 69, you know, in the 60s. And it's shot in a way where even though it looks good and like the moon stuff is very beautiful, of course, but like everything else, it felt like... And no shade, but it just felt like I was watching like an ABC period piece drama. They actually had like the Astronaut Wives Club or whatever a couple years ago. It felt literally like that. Like it just sort of felt like, oh, I've seen this before in like school. I'm not excited by the visuals. There are so many characters and I really don't care about any of them. So basically, yeah, the Soviets have landed on the moon. It really throws NASA for a loop. No one's really prepared for it. Everyone's kind of freaked out that Russia maybe has more intelligence than the U.S. So, you know, it relates to now. But it's just not exciting. And Joel Kinnaman looks bored. And I don't even really know what happened. I really checked out of this one. I think at the... Well, I don't
I have a
anything,
feeling
but,
that that's one where, like, you and I would be bored out of our minds. And Tom would be like, this was amazing.
Yes. you might be... You might be onto something, Foom, because, yeah, I could see Tom likes his history.
Love it.
You know, I like the fun history, the exciting history. So, yeah, all the reviews, you know, For All Mankind was reviewed kind of okay, better than C, but they all say, oh, it really picks up in episode 3. And you know what I say to that? I ain't got no time to go through episode 2.
Trust.
Like... You know, apparently in episode 3, there's a lot of female astronauts that we meet. So honestly, that sounds awesome. I love that they're kind of rewriting history and like there's a team of women. But I don't have time
with
to
over 500
it, you know?
Options in scripted alone. If you're not going to come correct at the very first show when you know we all know how long y'all have been working on these, y'all are crazy.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah. Because I remember back in the day when Downton Abbey, I know Tom just talked about that movie a few weeks ago, when the show started, everyone was saying, well, give it till episode 3, it gets better. Back then, it was kind of like, all right, but now I have so many other things in my queue, I got to move on. So ultimately, C and For All Mankind, for me personally, are okay to misses. You know, good job, y'all, but it's not for me.
Okay, I respect that. I probably agree with both of those assessments, even though I haven't watched you there. I hear you. Tom.
All right, so I went with Dickinson, and that is a half hour-ish comedy-ish. Another period piece-ish. see a trend here? Mm-hmm. It kind of reinvents the story of Emily Dickinson, who you should know, and if you don't know, shame on your English teacher in school. Very famous female American poet. Little twist that I did not actually know until the very beginning of the show, but her poems were never published when she was alive. They were all published, hundreds and hundreds of them, after she died. I was like,
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So good job, Apple, teaching us something. So the show basically just chronicles her life as a teenager growing up in Massachusetts on a farm when women were... asked to conform to all of the societal roles that, you know, that they had to deal with back in colonial times. But it's got a modern twist on it because it is a comedy. and they use modern dialogue, and there is some modern music in the show.
Very modern music.
It's pretty, very, very modern music. It's pretty cool, but it is very young adult. And because it is so YA, I'm going to say add this to your list, check it out, because it is very different. It's probably unlike anything you've seen in a while, at least. It's just not for me.
Okay.
Hailee Steinfeld plays Emily Dickinson. She's totally committed to the role. Jane Krakowski plays her mom, and she is funny as hell. The one-liners that come out of her mouth literally had me laughing out loud. The father, he was recognizable. He just played Judy Greer's husband in Halloween 2018, but the actor's name is escaping me. And then,
Tom,
of course,
did you see the other Halloween connection? Sorry.
Oh my God.
It's directed by David Gordon Green.
I did not notice that.
I didn't know David Gordon Green. He directed the pilot and he's an executive producer. So that's interesting.
Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
And then it also stars Wiz Khalifa, who plays a personification of death, because Emily Dickinson, as many of you might know, she struggled with depression her whole life because she was forced to conform to this life of females that she had no interest in.
A recluse.
Yep. Mm. Yep. As a recluse. Yep. So yeah, it's fresh, it's new, it looks really good. They get the period piece part of it right, as far as set design and costumes go. It's just I've got better things to watch than teenager shit.
So. Wow,
that is hilarious.
Teenager shade.
but honestly, A for effort. Like it kept me entertained. I just don't have an interest in finishing it out.
Meanwhile, I love teenager shit so much. So you know, when I watched it, I was like, oh, especially after watching For
Mark
All Mankind,
for
I was
the
like,
whole season.
I was like, oh my God, Dickinson, yes.
It's so funny. Yeah. I watched it too, and I watched like 3 episodes. I ended up watching like 1 and 2, and then skipping to like watch 10 because I like it, but I couldn't. I'm not gonna be able to do the whole thing. I thought it was interesting. I love the music. I think the music, whoever's doing the music on that show, is hitting it out of the park.
The score, just the instrumental,
so good.
Is perfect.
I thought that Hailee does a fantastic job as Emily Dickinson. You really can like feel her tapping into some like weird teenage version of
angst,
of her
lesbian
lesbian thing.
Yeah, I love that.
I agree, Tom, though. It's just not for me. I don't know what it is. It's not a bad show. Yeah. I think that you're absolutely right.
Nope.
It is 1,000% something new and different that we have not seen before.
Right.
But there's something about it that I'm just like, next. Like, I don't know. Maybe it is a teenager aspect of it.
I think it is. It's very YA.
It's very YA, very teen, and it's very light. Because some teen stuff, even like Riverdale or whatever, can get a little dark and like, you know, and this, at least from what I saw, it's very light and like kind of family friendly. So maybe that's it. It feels a little too PG.
You only watched the first episode, Tom?
Yes.
And Mark, did you start this?
Yeah, I started it. I only watched the first ep. But also, can we talk about, I was confused. Are all 10 episodes available
all
already?
All 10 episodes
that's not like the
available.
Other shows. Interesting. So
that must
why
mean
they chose
that the
this.
Show's doing really
well.
Well,
it's already
well,
been
I
renewed,
bet.
Like Mark said. It's already having a second season, but maybe because it's only 30 minutes. I don't know. I don't know what the other shows were. Were they hours?
Yeah, the other shows are all hours. Yeah. And I forget, Foom, for Dickinson, well, did you sign up for Apple Plus TV?
Oh, I did.
I
did
just
a
the first
7-day.
Couple episodes of each were free.
I did a 7-day trial. Oh. I don't know yet if I'm going to stick it out. But I was curious, so I did a 7-day trial for Dickinson.
Yeah.
So yeah, all 10 episodes were available. Gotcha. I will say that the standout one is, I think it's the third episode or something where they have like a house party. That was a funny episode, but it was like, there's one scene in there where I can't wait if you're able to watch. It's so perplexing. It's like the oddest thing. They're having like a house party because like the parents went away, so the kids will play, and they're like twerking and dancing, and I was cracking up because I was like, "What is this?"
Oh,
but
I love
also
that.
Was like, "What the hell is going on?"
yeah, it's wacky. I like that. It makes me think of I loved Marie Antoinette a few like 10 years ago with Kirsten Dunst and Sofia Coppola. Yeah. This is even more wacky than that, but I like the idea of old visuals with current music or, you know, so.
All right, so I will go next. I picked The Morning Show.
The big one.
Yes. The biggest
it's only
one.
Fitting because I work and talk. And The Morning Show is an hour drama starring two head honchos, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. I'm going to go off and just right off the bat say it's an ad. And I liked it, but I grew to like it after like the second or third episode. So essentially what it is, it's Jennifer Aniston is one half of a morning show co-host duo with Steve Carell. Alex and Mitch are their character names. And the very first episode is straight out of headlines. Mitch has been accused of sexual misconduct and he's out of there. So he leaves Jennifer Aniston's character in the lurch after working together for 15 years. And the very first episode is basically how does this morning show deal with this huge shakeup that has surprised the network, has surprised the coworkers, and has surprised America.
So it's basically Meredith and Matt.
Essentially. It really is, what it is. I mean, they even have the freaking, which I didn't like about the show because I thought it was corny, the door with the button. And I was like, okay.
The button,
It really is kind of like following what the fallout of what that looks like. Steve Carell has a pretty big role in this show, which I can't decide if I like. I feel like his character is arrogant, and I feel like his character is basically, woe is me. I didn't do anything wrong. I never forced anyone. I willingly had sex with all of these people, and he did fails to see that he uses the power that he has and how that can, make people uncomfortable. And they spend a lot of time on his character, like a lot. I would say in the episodes that I watched, Steve Carell gets more screen time than Reese Witherspoon does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and like a weird sense of like, and every time he's on that screen, he is throwing a tantrum. It is like, love me. I hate everybody. You all know what was going down. I didn't do anything wrong. He like destroys the television. And you see how like glamorous his life is. And even him talking about how he's going to have to like, you know, slow down with, even though he has an insane amount of money, like even the conversations he has about which properties he's going to keep. And it's just kind of like, all right, so is this kind of like a girl power type show, or is this like the Steve Carell like victim show? So things of that nature are a little kind of wonky for me. Reese Witherspoon is acting her motherfucking ass off in this show. She, and I love her, but I am not being presumptuous, or I'm not being like one-sided in saying that she's out-acting Jennifer Aniston in every single way.
Not a surprise.
Holy shit. She is killing it. The moment she is on screen, you're mesmerized. And, like, you were kind of saying how you got distracted a little bit by when you were watching C, like, you were kind of finding yourself doing other things. When I started off watching The Morning Show, I was, too. Like, I was like, oh, this is interesting. But then I very quickly got distracted by, like, Twitter or, like, my phone or whatever. And then the second Reese Witherspoon got on that screen, I was just, like, her voice just commanded something in the way that she was acting. Yeah. She was even sitting in a car. She wasn't even, like, doing anything.
Right, she's in a van, and, like, she's just so fiery.
She's fiery, and you're just like, wait, hold up. And the second that she got on the screen, then I was, like, all in. I was, like, paying attention to what was going on, what was happening.
But I do think Jennifer Aniston is good in this. I think she has a lot of her moments where she isn't speaking, like, when she's looking in the mirror, like, I'm actually feeling for her. And, like, what an interesting perspective. And I love that scene early on in the first episode when she's with Mark Duplass, who plays like her executive producer, and they're on the phone with the network, and
she's like,
I mean, when she plays angry, it is fun. Yeah, so they're, and And when they meet on set for the interview, I mean, it's pretty, you know,
and it's dynamite. Interesting to watch the behind the scenes of the way that like the show works and the way that the communication is with the network, mm-hmm. because I do think that they did nail that. And I think people mm-hmm. would be interested to kind of see the inner workings of what it is to look what it does look like to work in television. Cause, it ain't all pretty all people. It is, shady stuff, and you got to deal with a lot of BS and a lot of egos. So I think they did a really good job mm-hmm. of showcasing that.
And did you notice who plays Reese Witherspoon's mom? Do you guys remember that show in the 90s? We might have even talked about it, Grace Under Fire.
Oh my gosh, was that Grace?
That's her. Yeah, she got older.
What's the actress's name?
I'll come back to me. I'll look it up. But that's totally her from Grace Holy Under Fire,
crap.
Like early mid
90s. You're totally right. I didn't realize that. It's got a pretty, pretty great cast. I love the angry, like, black guy who was supposed to be the co-host. He's hilarious. And, you know, I thought initially from the previews of the show that Reese Witherspoon's character was going to already be, like, an established morning show herself, and it might have been more of a two women, like, going head-to-head. But the way that they... bring on Reese's character was different and surprising for me, so I actually appreciated that because it wasn't what I expected.
I agree. I was expecting what you were expecting as well, but I just can't figure out Reese's age because they make her with the wig like seem younger, and she's not at Jennifer Aniston's level, but she does say she's been in this industry for 15 years.
Like a single woman ever in her 40s to Billy Crudup.
Oh,
when they're talking.
Oh, does she? Okay.
That I will say is my one thing. I guess I just don't really love the men on the show, even though I do love Steve Carell. I hate Billy Crudup, and I always have. And so watching him on screen is very hard, and it might contribute to me not loving the show the way that I could.
He's a perfect like network.
He's playing
like,
it well,
you know?
But just I despise him as just like a human being. Mm. So
Mary Louise Parker.
He's hot though.
Is he? No, he's not. He is such.
He's aging very well.
So he's also in it as a network executive. Like I said, Steve Carell plays Jennifer Aniston's ex co-host. Mark Duplass mm-hmm. is in it. He's the executive producer. Gugu Mbatha-Ra is a talent booker on the show. So yeah, it's got a pretty good all-star cast here.
Yeah.
And you can tell the production value. I mean, this first season I heard is $300 million. You can see where that money went for sure.
That is crazy outrageous. $300 million. Dollars. Wow.
So that is The Morning Show. Tom, did you watch it?
Yeah.
No, the only one I've watched is Dickinson.
Are you going to watch it? Do you think you're going to?
Probably not.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wow, Tom. Okay.
We're not getting an Apple subscription, so.
Okay. You haven't seen anything you need to see. I have to tell you, The Morning Show surprised me. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little cynical. Like these last few weeks, once I started hearing like reviews and that it wasn't so great, I was like, I kind of want this to. How fun would it be to just have it crash and burn because it's so expensive? But I got to say, Morning Show is, I really like it. I really, really like it. Yeah.
No, in this era where you're faced with streaming subscriptions everywhere you turn now,
I know.
Not everyone's going to make the
Absolutely.
Cut.
Absolutely.
You know?
I'll give you my login when I get one.
So that's it. That's our thoughts on Apple TV. We want to thank Allie and Jay and Greg for contributing to the podcast. We want to thank all of our listeners.
Yes.
Leave us a review, people. Let us know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Let us know if you want us to talk about anything. And we will be back to talk about whatever it is we talk about next.
Oh yeah, I guess next up
surprise,
next up will be Disney Plus. That's the big next thing. That's coming
in
just a couple days.
The next thing.
Wow.
Overwhelming.
And then only a few months from that will be HBO Max. Oh my god, I can't keep up.
Oh yeah, because 2020 is around the corner, isn't it? Wow.
Yep.
All right, y'all. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Ciao.